Okay, we are back with Truth News Radio Australia, and we are back with Josh Jackson, and we are back with the Killer Pig Flu. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Oh, Harold, it's always a pleasure. Another week.
Look, we've just had a fantastic interview with Bob Phelps of Gene Ethics Australia.
Mm.
And we've covered a lot of ground there. And I just want to get
it's
back...
It's interviews like that that makes this show the best show here in Australia.
Look, we are getting into territory that other media just doesn't want to go into. How interesting. Well, we're going to get there and we're going to cover those niche areas and we're going to show what media can really be.
Well, you know, Harold, it was funny. One of the comments for last week's show was that, you know, we're sounding too anti-government. And, well, what I say to them is that every other media are just for government. They're just everything they do is, oh, the government's good. And, you know, they nitpick about one side a little bit, you know, they sort of pick on them. But they don't really expose the truth behind what happens. So this little station here, this little show here, you know, I for one, I mean, I must say, I'm really, you know, as little government as possible, if not none. I mean, that's how I'm you know, I'm a bit of a anarcho-capitalist.
Well, Josh, you are a resident anarcho-capitalist, you know, advocate. And I'm not even an anarcho-capitalist. I mean, I'm just like a guy who wants to tell, you know, to tell the truth.
You're a freedom-loving, truth-loving man.
Yeah, and you know, and like, I mean, I don't want to be too goody-goody about it. I mean, I'm just saying, like, I just want to tell the truth because the truth needs to be told. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's a lot of people with a lot of big ideas out there about how we should run the world, and you know, and I say good on them, you know, and good luck, you know, and I'll contribute as I can to what
my opinion.
Yeah,
you pick
on,
out the bad
on
bits and the good bits.
Yeah.
And
but what I'm trying to do, and what I believe we're trying to do here is we're trying to be a conduit. So that the knowledge which is available is not locked up. Because at the moment we have a situation in our society where there is a lot of knowledge that's locked up because the media is not doing its job, okay? Because the press is not doing its job, because the television is not doing its job, the radio is not doing its job, the internet portals of the news sites are not doing their job. However, there is this little other area, this little crack in the facade, which is the free internet, which we are taking full advantage of, and so are millions of others, to basically broadcast knowledge, and you know we are participating in this fantastic experiment of communication,
and that's again why we really need to fight hard, and stay vigilant on the case of internet freedom as a general, I mean freedom in general, but freedom of expression and freedom of speech on the internet is so important. And we've just heard that the Alex Jones show has been shut down on YouTube. So the Alex Jones channel, I should say.
The Alex Jones channel, which is a YouTube channel, which was not an official Alex Jones YouTube channel, but it became a semi-official one and was kind of embraced by InfoWars.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I mean, they sort of – it became sort of official, but they outsourced it to a fan, basically.
Indeed,
a fan
indeed.
Started
yeah,
it, and
yeah.
It became the official site.
Alex
Massively
Jones popular.
Called the White House and left a very, you know – astute and succinct message on their message bank, and said, you know, that his videos are the most viral on the internet, and the truth is getting out there, and all this stuff,
indeed. For those listeners, and believe it or not, there may be listeners who don't know who Alex Jones is or what InfoWars is. Infowars.com is a website run by Alex Jones, who is an internet radio host, extremely popular, somewhat
he's a syndicated radio host too.
Yes, he's syndicated. He's a great freedom-loving guy. Sometimes goes a little bit overboard and puts a few people's noses out of joint, but he's been a great source of knowledge and information for me. And as I get more and more into this area that we're exploring here, I come to understand more and more the frustrations that someone like Alex Jones feels, and I can understand why sometimes he goes a little bit overboard in his own presentation style. Because as you start to feed in this information about many, many different areas in which our society is being kind of co-opted into a global totalitarian control grid, it starts to work on you. And you realize that you have to speak out, and the pressure builds up. And I can understand why it leads, in some cases, to overreaction. Okay, but it is something we have to guard against. We do have to guard against going too hard, becoming too extreme, or becoming too conspiratorial. We have to restrain ourselves, and it's a task we have to do for the purpose of being able to continually communicate on a good level, right? So that the most people can listen and understand and appreciate us.
Yeah, absolutely. I back that 100%. One thing I would do for people that are worried about this YouTube takedown this is thousands of subscribers to this channel, millions of views of these videos, hundreds of five-star ratings and favorites, and then these videos are also syndicated all around the web, embedded all around the web into websites. So by shutting down this channel, it shuts down every video that was on that channel, which is literally thousands. And please, folks, send an email to support@youtube.com and express your disbelief at them censoring Alex Jones. Now, what the excuse they used was that he was the channel was breaching copyright because one of the videos in Alex Jones, which he does all the time, but is hold up a printed out news article from some newspaper, and that was considered copyright. So they basically took down the whole lot because he held up a newspaper. Now, if you look at Media Watch or any of these shows, or even just general news, they constantly show news articles from other affiliate networks, or from other networks that aren't even affiliated, or in the case of Media Watch, they're always just bringing up any sort of news article straight, so you can read every part of it. I mean, if that constitutes copyright, then surely Media Watch should be taken off the air.
Look, it just seems an excuse to me. Why would they delete the whole channel? I mean, surely just the one video. they didn't have to delete the whole channel.
No, look, obviously the video, I really believe that him sending that message to the White House, because the message was amazing. It was about five minutes long.
Well, in the same show as he did that, he did this excellent interview with Niels Harrit, the Danish scientist, who is really one of the key people now, who is breaking the blockade on 9/11 Truth. Two things there that are quite significant. I'm not sure about the phoning of the White House. It was humorous. I found it humorous. I thought he made some good points.
But it was interesting that he stated right at the start of that his videos are more popular than major TV shows and more viral or whatever it was. I can't remember the exact quote. He definitely talks specifically to his videos, which obviously means YouTube. I find it quite interesting that Google has got definite connections with the industrial military complex and intelligence agencies. They've definitely been in talks with them in terms of data mining, technology, and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, folks, send YouTube an email. If not, you can even ring them on +1 650 253 0000.
Great.
Or you can send them a fax. That's +1 650 253 0001, and tell them to put the Alex Jones channel. That's the name of the channel, the Alex Jones channel, to reinstate it. You know, be nice. Don't be rude. The more people that do that, the more they'll be. I think, you know, emails are easy. They can just set up a rule to just ignore anything that has the Alex Jones channel in the email, so they can just easily just ignore all of them. But if you fax them or ring them, you know, they can't ignore all that.
Great stuff. Okay, well, look, I'd just like to quickly return to the story we were covering last week, which is still, of course, a global story, the swine flu. I think it's really important that we understand now, as time's gone by, we've come to understand that the swine flu is more or less a complete hoax, okay? And I use that word deliberately, because you could say, well, it's an accident, or it isn't really what, you know, we didn't know, blah blah blah. But it is totally irresponsible to blow something out of all proportion and create a global international scare over something that is not even causing more than a normal mild flu in the people who are making it, who are becoming ill with it. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's why it's quite correct to call it a hoax. Now, whether or not it's a deliberate hoax, whether it's just opportunistic, I don't know. The issue of whether the virus really is, unique in any way, I don't know. Whether the virus may have been manufactured in a lab, I don't know. And I don't care, okay? Because basically this whole thing is just a way of the government and corporations and those who want to wield more power to consolidate that and to scare us, as well as to scam us with products that we don't need. And case in point, I'll just read you a story that was in today's Sydney Morning Herald. Flu scare triggers a rash of fake drugs. Desperate people are paying up to $150 for fake Tamiflu, the drug used to treat swine flu victims. Notice they call them victims. It's a strange word to use. Because they are frightened, pharmacies will run out of supplies if a pandemic hits. Spam emails for the fake drugs.
They don't even know that Tamiflu works.
Well,
on the H1N1 strain.
Well, you know, it's like tiger repellent, okay? How do you know tiger repellent works? Oh, there's no tigers, okay? I mean, someone's got a mild flu. They're going to get better in about 3 days, okay? If you give them Tamiflu, they're going to get better in about 3 days, okay? So do you say the Tamiflu made them better? Or do you just say,
not
well,
only that, they go a little
better.
Bit schizo and start screaming that the legs are falling off and they're in absolute pain.
As we covered last week, it does make certain
some
proportion
of
people
of
go
symptoms.
Completely insane. I wish, you know, maybe the people who make Tamiflu should be given Tamiflu. Maybe it will make them normal again. I don't know. But the point here is that the hype over this ridiculous epidemic, which has killed no one in the Western world apart from one toddler in Texas who came from Mexico,
who had lung problems and was born premature.
People have,
and you know, got you know, rest his soul, and I'm really sorry to hear that. But that's one kid.
Indeed. And people have been, I mean, driven into a frenzy about this flu. Desperate for the medicine that they think they need, and they're paying ridiculous inflated prices for fake Tamiflu. Well, I mean, I actually think you'd be better off taking the fake Tamiflu than the real Tamiflu. You know, I mean, hopefully it's just an inert, you know, sugar pill. You know, that would be better. But the whole thing is absurd. The whole thing is a farce. Okay, and we had pronouncements from the government that they were going to bring in all these draconian measures. People could be detained. People have been detained against their will. People have been quarantined in hotels. A whole hotel full of people in Hong Kong has been detained. 300 people locked in a hotel. We've got the government here saying that they could stop off air traffic into and out of the country. And we had all of this drama about the issuing of the, you know, phase six. We went to phase five, right? And as they were describing it in the first part of the week, they were saying, if we get to phase six, it'll be, you know, an unimaginable situation that's never happened in any of our lifetimes. And they really built it up as an incredibly frightening thing that we might go to level six. But it turns out that level six just means that it has reached a certain point in the cycle of the disease. And that once it's reached that point, it is then in the sort of tail-off phase. And it means nothing in terms of whether there's going to be a terrible death toll or anything like that. But they didn't tell us that in the beginning. For the first few days, most people had never even heard of the WHO scale. I certainly was completely unaware of it. Were you aware of it, Josh? Were you aware that the WHO has six levels?
No.
The first I heard of it was about 2 days after this scare, and they said it's gone from one to two to three to
and there's
four.
Only six.
Yeah, and we're almost at. And then it went to five, and of course you're going to create a panic when you do that. I mean, you know, just and yet, what I can tell you is there wasn't really much of a panic here. I mean, I work in a big office full of people, and no one seems to really care. Okay, that's actually the truth is that people are very very. Got very thick skins these days because they've heard it all before. But, you know, the panic aspect still does get into people's subconscious. And you know, probably pensioners living alone, people who are more vulnerable, they'll be affected by it. And subconsciously, when we're all absorbing this propaganda and this fear mechanism, it makes people more likely to accept draconian government measures because they think, oh, it's all about protecting me. So it just, again, comes back to this this constant theme of the control paradigm, the problem-reaction-solution paradigm.
It's also a system of setting up people, getting them ready, getting them ready for a global government, a global police state, more freedoms taken away. You know, I mean, the precedents have been set and people say, oh, that's reasonable. You know, it's reasonable to lock people up into buildings for hours at a day. It's reasonable to take everyone off a plane and shove them. It's reasonable because one person has a flu in a hotel to just lock down the whole hotel without, you know, sort of any contact to the outside world apart from the telephone. It's reasonable to do these sort of measures. And then, you know, that's always reasonable to also isolate and lock down entire countries. You know, I mean, it just goes forward and forward. And this is the sort of a rhetoric. Now, if there was a massive pandemic, you know, people will be straight away like, yep, save me. Save me, government. You know best. You know, instead of, you know, being prepared, having food for themselves, being able to quarantine themselves, being, you know, getting good vitamins and, you know, being, having some good health, you know, taking responsibility for yourself. It's all about, just letting the government save you and yep, take away my freedoms. Just don't let the swine flu get me.
Right.
And, you know, correct. Look, if we look at the real killers on this earth, if we look at the real, it is only, you know, I mean, look at the real reasons for death. I mean, you've got Britain responsible for more than 727 deaths with dozens of countries, including Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Afghanistan, Iraq. You've got France responsible for another 142 million deaths in countries like Algeria, Vietnam, Haiti, Ivory Coast. You know, it goes on and on. You got U.S. responsible for 82 million in Vietnam, in Korea, in Cambodia, in Haiti, in Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere. You know, it just, it goes on and on. you've got governments trading arms and killing millions, and it's in the billions of people.
Well, we had that survey that was done in Iraq about 3 years ago, which showed that at that time, and it was done very rigorously, and it was done with very, very, you know, respected methods, and they found that 600,000 had died, and the pattern has continued, and that's been extrapolated now to well over 1 million in Iraq. Now, I mean, that's people being killed with bullets, bombs, you know, grenades. Who needs viruses? You know, I mean, this is what we are doing to our fellow human beings. When I say
who needs viruses, that's the plague, that's the scourge.
Yeah,
this sort of predatory, disgusting cancer on society that we all praise and look up to and say, oh, they know best.
And in terms of death from illness, do you know malaria kills millions of people every year? Okay. Malaria is probably the biggest killer on Earth in terms of infectious diseases. But guess what? You know, malaria, there isn't a kind of a universal magic bullet for malaria. There isn't like a vaccination for it. There isn't some magical drug, and it's not that important. And we don't even hear about it. Do you know what I mean? Like we hear about like one toddler in Texas died from this flu that's like taking over the world, and it's just the end of the world.
That toddler was white, you know, so he matters. These people that get malaria, they're all dark. They're all dark-coloured skin, so they don't really matter in the eyes of, you know, the Western civilization.
I don't want to seem to not care about the toddler in Texas either. I do care about that little child. I'm very sorry about it, okay? I'm sorry for any child that dies. I feel compassionate, and I feel passionately about this.
Well, absolutely, man. But it's this sort of, you know, this kind of disconnect we see as sort of affluent Westerners, where we watch telly and we see, you know, some African kid with flies going up his nose and some aid company asking for donations, and we sort of, oh God, isn't that, oh, do I really have to watch this while I'm eating, you know, and we just want to change the channel, or we sort of, oh, we feel better because we send $10, you know, when really the system, folks, the system, the banking system. I mean, do you know that 1.3 billion people live on less than a dollar a day in this world? You know, I mean, and I'm not saying, ooh, well, in some countries, a dollar a day buys you a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. It doesn't buy you a lot anywhere.
It's an epidemic of poverty. Most people don't have clean drinking water. And, of course, this lack of good, clean drinking water is really a killer. I mean, if you can't rely on your water to be free of microbes and bacteria, you're so much more vulnerable, okay? And that's probably the main reason why we have so much less infectious disease in our modern industrialized countries, is because we have a pure water supply, apart from the fluoride, which we wish was not there, right? But at least our water is not contaminated with a lot of parasites, bacteria, and microbes. That's an achievement that occurred as a result of improvements that were hard won. You know, there were social movements and social developments to improve basic sanitation, which took place at the end of the 19th century and progressed right through the 20th century.
Yeah, but guess what got all the credit? You know, vaccines. They got all the credit for that.
Indeed. Well, if you look at who takes the credit, yeah, vaccines, the pharmacological solutions, but if you look at the actual graphs and you look at the actual history, what you see is infectious disease was way in decline before a vaccine came in for a particular disease. Measles had practically been wiped out, and then they introduced a measles vaccine. And now they say, oh, the measles vaccine got rid of measles. Look, Anyway, we're actually bleeding into the next segment because we actually really do want to talk about the vaccination debate, so-called. I put that in inverted commas, which took place on Channel 7. So we're just going to have a very quick call sign break, and we will be right back to talk about vaccination in Australia. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, back with Truth News Radio Australia. That's www.truthnews.com.au.
Remember to leave some comments, folks. Look, I just wanted to finish up on what I was saying quickly there, and we'll head on to the next section. But basically, while I was going on about these other things, I mean, these other pandemics, like global starvation, you know, global hunger and starvation and famine is when there's plenty of food in the world, you know, 5 million annual smokers die of smoking related, 2 million of alcohol. You've got, you know, about 1 million annual suicides in Western, you know, I mean, I don't know some of these numbers where they come from, but, you know, from the sites that I'm reading them from. And, you know, the thing is, they're huge numbers, and they're real pandemics that are totally preventable. They're not fake ones like these sort of fine swine flus, which are totally blown out of proportion. I mean, the fact that people are living on such little money is about the issuance of liquidity, the issuance of currency to these countries have been stifled by the banking system of the world, the controlled banking system, which is very easily deconstructed and exposed by people educating themselves about where money comes from and how it works.
Absolutely. Thanks for that clarification there. Okay, great. Look, I'm just going to play a segment here from Sunday night on Channel 7. There was a program. It was in two parts. It was really the only correct way to describe this is to call it a propaganda piece. I know that sounds strong, but I've watched the first part that was done a week before, and then the second part, which was, you know, a studio kind of discussion. And watching the two back to back, what I found is that the first piece was really focused on one couple whose child died, and seemed to really extract as much, you know, pull on your heartstrings as much as possible over this one tragedy that affected this family, and then to use that as a lever to put pressure on anyone who is against vaccination that they are somehow possibly contributing to the death of such a child, or, you know, in the future that something like this may happen, that they will somehow be responsible, because the argument that they're putting forth is that people who do not wish to vaccinate their own children are putting other children at risk. And they even use the word poison. I noticed in the actual first piece they called it a poison. They said that unvaccinated children were a poison in society. And I thought, my goodness, that is a really interesting choice of words. I'll just play. We'll kick off here with the video, and we may pause and comment as we see fit.
Fear and confusion. That's the message we received from thousands of emailers after our story on vaccination last week. The other thing that became clear was that parents want a lot more information. We'll try to answer your concerns tonight, but first, let's just recap the tragic story that sparked this debate.
What would you say to those parents who still refuse to vaccinate their children?
You're not only putting your child at risk, you're putting every child out there at risk.
This is Dana.
Dana who?
Dana Elizabeth McCaffrey.
Oh, she's beautiful.
1 minute she's this beautiful little girl, and then You know, she looked like someone had strangled her.
I'm just going to pause for comment there. Note the background music. Note the heightened sense of emotion that they are projecting. This is actually from the first piece that they're replaying. How does it strike you, Josh?
It is very, very sad, and I feel very, very sad for these parents, and they're misguided for sure.
But I just can't help noticing the production values that they've placed on the close-up
shots. It's like a melodrama, you know. But this is typical entertainment stuff, you know.
Right.
Lift music. You can just see the director in the booth with 100 screens there, directing the different cameras. Lift music. What, you know? I mean, it's typical entertainment stuff, you know, or edutainment.
Designed to provoke a particular type of response in the audience.
You know, and look, these parents have had a child die, which is one of the worst things anyone could ever go through. And they've made it their mission. They've gone, right, vaccines are to blame. We didn't vaccinate. We want everyone to vaccinate now. And their big crusade now is to get every child vaccinated in Australia.
Okay, we'll just continue playing.
Dana McCaffrey's life was too short. She was born perfectly healthy. But at 4 weeks old, Dana caught whooping cough.
It is really difficult to watch any baby go through that. I think the risk benefit for vaccination is firmly established. The benefit far outweighs the risk.
We have a medical community that's saying if you get measles, if you get whooping cough, you're going to die from it. Well, where is the information from that?
It's just not right. It's just not right that my little girl is in a grave. I didn't want to be the vaccination crusader, you know?
Nor is it our responsibility. It's a responsibility of governments, and they need to take charge.
I just want my girl.
Yeah, the McCaffrey family is with us tonight, and we'll come to them shortly. We're also joined by Professor Peter McIntyre from the National Immunisation and Surveillance Centre and anti-vaccine GP Dr. Giselle Cook. Dr. Cook, you object to me calling you an anti-vaccine GP.
Absolutely. That's in no way an accurate representation of what my advice is to my patients.
Despite not having given a vaccination for 18 years.
My advice is that I'm pro-choice.
But you haven't given a vaccination for 18
that's
years.
That's my personal choice in my practice because I do not provide risky medical interventions to my patients, and I consider vaccination as one of those.
Do you think it's anti-vaccine, Professor?
Well, I think it's Russian roulette, really, because, sure, the number of children these days with good medical care who actually tragically die from these diseases, largely because vaccination has diminished them so much, is very small, but you don't know whether your child will be one of those unlucky ones. There's nothing in terms of fantastic diet, great lifestyle that's going to protect them. Only vaccination will protect them, and sure, there may be no problem, but it's Russian roulette as to...
Just pause it there again. Okay, the claim he made there is an absolutely sweeping and outrageous one. The only thing that will protect your child is vaccination. What do you say to that, Josh?
Well, against what first?
Well, he didn't even say, did he? The fact is, I mean, it's well established that having a basically strong constitution and being basically healthy is, of course, a strong protection against dying of any illness. It's an outrageous proposition to say that has no bearing on it. And that is exactly what he said.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's fine to give, you know, babies, you know, KFC and you know, feed them all sorts of rubbish and then give them, you know, some sort of, you know, baby Panadol.
The only thing that matters, thing that will save them is our silver bullet, you know. And if you don't take the silver bullet, it makes no difference. There's nothing you can do to save yourself.
I mean, there is generally a lack of understanding of basic nutrition in Australia.
And I think the good doctor here is an example of that. a sad
I mean,
example.
Like you said last week, is there anything nutritious in a vaccine? Anything?
Indeed. Actually, a point you made earlier, Josh, has got me thinking. You said that the family concerned didn't vaccinate their child, the couple that we saw earlier. You said they didn't. Now, I've not seen any confirmation, and I'm trying to think back because I've watched part one and part two. I've not seen any statement as to whether they did or did not vaccinate their child. And the whole argument that they're putting forward here is that even vaccinated children will get whooping cough if they get exposed to unvaccinated children.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. They interview this girl later on, and I don't know if we'll get right the way through the video, but basically interview this mother that's holding a baby, say one that's vaccinated a child, and she's saying, oh, I'm so – they're saying, are you scared of being around that kid over there because he's not vaccinated? And she's like, oh, yes, yes, very scared. I'm very, very scared of that. And I'm quite, angry at parents that don't vaccinate because it puts my child at risk. And I'm thinking, hang on, but your child's vaccinated. If it's such an amazing cure, then surely it doesn't matter anymore, right? You can just hang around other – unless I've got something totally – wrong about how vaccinations work, and that you can, you can only catch them off humans when you're vaccinated. Not,
well, the concept of herd immunity is heavily promoted, so they talk about herd immunity. I don't like us being referred to as a herd. That's one thing. I don't like the language. The other thing is, if the vaccination was effective, then. And that's what they claim, that the vaccination is effective. And the whole thrust of it is that, being vaccinated will protect you. Then there is something very, I hate to always use this term, but I have to say Orwellian. There's a doublethink aspect here. Because they're saying on the one hand the vaccination will protect you, but on the other hand they're saying the vaccination won't protect you. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, that's
right.
They're
saying you have to take it because it will protect you. But then they're saying, oh, actually, it won't protect you.
It won't protect you from other people that haven't had it.
It's actually very, very strange when you think about it, when you really focus on that aspect. And I'd actually like to investigate more with this particular piece to find out whether the family concerned did vaccinate their child or not. I wouldn't be the least surprised if the child was vaccinated. Because most whooping cough occurs in vaccinated children, because most children are vaccinated.
Yeah, just standard. No.
Yeah, I would be surprised if that child wasn't vaccinated, considering the attitude of their parents. Because in order to not be vaccinated, you have to be very quite deliberate and upfront, and you've got to say no. Because if you go along with everything, they will get vaccinated automatically.
Mm.
So yeah. Okay, shall we continue? I'll just
bring it on.
Whether your child's the one that dies or not.
The medical profession always talks about risks.
Exactly.
What are the risks? That's what parents really... That's why we're here today, because parents aren't sure about these risks.
Well, one of the real dilemmas, I suppose, for vaccination is that it's been a victim of its own success. So vaccines have been so successful at turning diseases that people were really fearful of, like polio in the 1950s, into things which are in the history books, that we're not reminded about why it's so important. And we see people who come to our country as refugees or immigrants from countries that aren't as lucky as our own, they can't wait to get vaccinated because they realise the value of it from what they've seen in their own country. But we don't see that.
So here, refugees, probably obviously war-torn, probably got bad water, not very good nutrition, and they can't wait to get vaccinated. No, because it's got nothing to do with the nutrition or the good quality water we have here and the lovely sunshine and the peace, folks, that we adhere here. The fresh lettuce and the fresh herbs and beautiful food we can just purchase at any time. Without being shot from the supermarkets. It's got nothing to do with that. It's just got to do because we're all vaccinated, and that's all. In fact, if we're all war-torn here and we're all vaccinated, we'd be fine.
Yeah.
According to this doctor, apparently.
It would seem that way. He's quite an extraordinary individual. I'll just hit the button here again.
Because things are going so well.
Ms. Dory, you want to say something, obviously?
In 1970, when the measles vaccine was introduced in Australia, there were 3 deaths in the country from measles. Right now, the government says there are 12 deaths a year. So I don't say that there's been any benefit from the measles vaccine.
You also did say that you were going to bring along a case of autism and also another case of a child suffering fit disorders. Neither of those cases eventuated, Ms.
Dory. Well, actually, I gave those numbers to Gabrielle, but she has not contacted the parents, one of them in Melbourne and another one in Sydney.
No, she has contacted them, and they didn't want to speak out. And I think this is one of the problems from your network that you often do say that there are these.
I'll just comment here. Meryl Drury has been on this program. She's an extremely articulate person. I think she's really got them by the short and curlies in what she's just said. And I hope to speak to her again about this because... I think that Channel 7 has gone so far out on a limb here that they may have breached some... I'm really hoping that we can actually nail them for having breached some kind of ethical, legal...
Yeah, I mean, what they say is they really accuse her. He what's his name, the interviewer again?
Is it Mike Munro? I don't know.
Mike Munro. Is it Munro? Yeah, I think it is. He jumps down her throat saying, you promised us 2 people, one with autism, and, they never eventuated, so they don't exist. You know, that's what he's saying. You'll hear it later. They don't exist, you know. So you're lying, and that's the problem with your network is you come up with all these claims like there's all these children with autism, but, you know, they don't exist. You know, I mean, it's just simple. You just jump on and see the statistics in America or in Australia, the jump in autism. I mean, it's absolutely huge.
There's a statistical undeniable fact of the jump in autism. But there's also, and what Meryl is referring to is individual cases where the link is direct, you know. I mean, you can say, okay, there's this increase in autism. Well, that could be due to many, many factors, right? But what is the evidence of direct link? And there are many cases, and there have been court cases. There have been studies. There's a lot of science behind this that vaccination leads to autism. Sometimes within a very short span of time, the child is traumatized. The child goes into some strange state and never comes out of it.
Look, and folks, I just want to quickly say here that we are not anti-vaccination as a concept. I'm sure it could work. I'm sure you can get vaccinated for certain diseases.
I used to believe in it. You know,
there probably is a way of doing it. I mean, it's you know, but what we are saying here is autism is caused by the
there's a trauma that occurs when a child is vaccinated. It's an assault on the body. You know, for a very small child, it's worse. For a baby, it's worse. For a newborn, it's, you know, astronomically worse, because you're basically doing something that the human being at that tender age cannot easily deal with, which is you're injecting toxins straight into the bloodstream.
And mercury. Straight into the blood system, folks. Yeah. Now, the blood-brain barrier in little boys, especially, little girls are a little bit better off. There's less autism in little girls because this barrier is a bit thicker. It can handle the 3 shots. And but the mercury goes straight into the brain, and being the second most toxic element on the periodic table to human beings, it is gonna do damage. Now, some people manage to pull back, but no one really knows the true potential of what you could have been hadn't you had the shot. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I had the shots, I'm fine.
Well, yeah, well, the fact that it doesn't, you know, kill most people doesn't mean or the fact that it doesn't, you know, make every child autistic, you know, doesn't mean that the ones that didn't become autistic or didn't have some extreme reaction weren't hurt by it in some way. It's just that you can't see it straight easily. You can't, and, you know, when it's done on such a large scale, you've got no control population. You've got nothing, you know. You know what I mean by control. You need to have another population that wasn't vaccinated to compare them, and we don't have that.
With normal drugs, if there is even a few deaths, generally, the drug gets taken off the market. You know,
With
vaccines, if there's a heap of autism, they'll just go. I mean, it's typically like the smoking thing. You can't really link it, and it just goes on for years because there's massive amounts of money to be made from cigarettes. So for years and years, it's being covered up. It's exactly like that. It's exactly like the smoking.
And look, my study, and I've done some research on this now, and I used to believe in vaccination. I used to accept it, but the information started coming in. I started reading things. I'm now pretty skeptical of vaccination, going right back to the first principles. I've got books that were written 80 years ago that described, and these were written by anti-vaccine activists at the beginning of the 20th century, okay, that described the complete failure of smallpox vaccination. And this is the one that we've been told was, you know, the uncontrovertible proof of the power of vaccination. But according to some of this research that was done at that time, that the smallpox vaccine was not what we were told in subsequent generations. There were many, many cases where the smallpox vaccine caused smallpox epidemics. There's a direct parallel between giving the vaccine and the epidemic occurring. I can also confirm that the worst polio epidemic that occurred in the 20th century, which occurred in the 1950s, okay, at a time when polio was already in decline, occurred after they introduced a vaccine for it. It was called the Salk vaccine. That's a couple of examples there of information that I've been able to glean.
The other thing is that vaccines are extraordinarily experimental. I mean, the HPV vaccine advised for most girls and now for boys, funnily enough.
They would like to bring it in for boys. I don't think it's prescribed yet, but it's going to be. They will bring it in.
They're pushing it for first for the gay population. But anyway, this has got a live cancer virus in the vaccine.
Oh, look, there's a lot of hocus pocus with these vaccines, and the idea that the virus can cause cancer again is actually hocus pocus.
They don't even know what it is. I mean, they're just shoving this stuff in. So they got a hypothesis, tested it for a little while, gets rushed through the process without any sort of true, thorough testing, which usually takes years and years, but these things just get rushed through. And then goes straight, not only gets rushed through, but the government then gets lobbied to make it mandatory, not mandatory, but free, so that, and then plus all these fear campaigns come on television and stuff. So, parents just go out there, well-meaning parents go out there and vaccinate their little girls.
Look, all I'm saying is that I'm totally in favor of science. I'm totally in favor of medical research. I'm totally in favour of anything that can really help us. But when you see something that is about science being turned into a political tool for mass social control, it is no longer science. It is dogma, superstition. Right? And that's what is going on here. And it is an outrage.
No, it's the same with with fluoride in the water. It's a dogma, superstition. You talk to anyone, they haven't read a thing. They haven't read one thing, but they'll say, fluoride's good for your teeth. Shut up.
Well, my own dentist told me that fluoride has no value at all in the water
supply. Your own dentist.
My own dentist told me that fluoride in the water supply has zero benefit for teeth. And, you know, she's been practicing for 20 years. She's very, very experienced, very knowledgeable. And she also told me that she filters it out of her water. She doesn't even want it in her water. She removes it, okay? So
she goes and spends thousands of dollars getting a reverse osmosis-style system.
A dentist.
A dentist to filter it out. Is this in her office, Harold?
Yeah, in her office and at home. She doesn't even want her customers who come to her office inadvertently drinking it.
Oh, God. Isn't that amazing? I mean, this is amazing. So this is a mainstream dentist. You know, look, anyway. People have this dogma that they hear something or their parents told them something or, you know, and they don't actually look at it and they go around parroting it. They go around parroting it, and not only the parrot, but if you try to, you know, if you try to tell them something different, oh, I guess that some new information's come up. You know, sodium fluoride, which is in the water supply, and consuming it doesn't actually do anything for you. In fact, Germany hasn't got it, and they've got the same teeth quality as us. Boom! Get it. You know, they get really angry. They say, oh, you're one of those conspiracy theorists. I'm sick of you talking, you know, this rubbish. That, like, I've had that. Honestly, I've had it. And
I think we've all experienced it.
Then you
that.
Say, look, just look it up. Just look it up. Just spend 20 minutes and look it up. I'll send you some links. And I won't even send links. Just go and Google it. Do your own research. They do, and they come back and they say, inevitably enough, man, sorry, Josh, you're right. Wow. You know, it's calcium fluoride when you put that directly on the teeth that helps a little. You know, but consuming sodium fluoride from industrial waste from the aluminium smelters or wherever it comes from, you know, doesn't really do anything but poison you.
Yes. Anyway, look, we've digressed. Let me just continue with a bit more of this interview and then this video, and then we'll
cases, but they never really eventuate.
Well, we've reported all of our reactions to the government since 2002. We were entitled to,
and yet the government says keep vaccinating.
Well, the government says keep vaccinating, but we're looking at the government's own information.
Well, there's a couple of inaccuracies about what Merrill's just said. So, firstly, it's completely untrue that there are deaths from measles. There hasn't been a death from measles in over 20 years, and yet if we look back in the 1950s, before measles vaccination, there were 20 or 30 deaths a year. So, I'm not sure where Merrill's getting her information from. But there have been no deaths from measles in Australia for a long time. In fact, one of the reasons there was a kind of tail of deaths was there's this very nasty thing called SSPE, which is basically brain damage you get from measles that happens about 20 years after you get measles. You don't get that from the vaccine. You do get it from measles, and so there will still be deaths recorded as measles 20 years later. But actual deaths from measles itself, no.
We have twins in this.
I'm going to have to leave it there, Josh. I think because we're running sort of over time tonight. We've had a long show. That last point. I'm going to follow up on some of the statements made by this doctor. I'm going to make a point of it because he's really. I'm getting quite annoyed by it. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think this guy is making some completely factually incorrect statements. And I think we're going to investigate this. What do you say?
Yeah, and I'd urge our listeners to investigate it too, you know, and send in information to us.
This man can be called to account, you know. He's a citizen of this country subject to our laws. And I'd say there's got to be something under our legal framework that if someone's telling you blatant lies on television... That something can be done about that, and you know, I think that we need pursue whatever legal avenues are available.
Public health alert: measles outbreaks in Australia, 12th April 2006. This is from health.sa.gov.au. You know, a measles outbreak.
Yeah.
Notified 5 cases of measles within the family in Adelaide. I mean, it's just total lies. This guy just spews forth.
But we need to, and I will make it a focus to actually prove that. Because I'm like, I can sit here and rant about it. I can, but, you know, we can nail this guy. And yeah. I hope that our listeners can understand the importance of this. That you don't just sit at home and get angry and shout. You take steps, and you use every avenue that you've got. And then we go back to the media. We force them to make a retraction. We force them to print something in the newspaper. And we use whatever legal avenues we have.
And it's important, folks, you know, it's only me and Harold, you know. So it's really important that you jump on to the comments of this podcast and help us out. If you find some information, post it on there. You know, this is truth news, because we're trying to dig at the truth. You know, we're not right 100% of the time. We're trying to get to that holy grail of truth.
And we are focusing on Australia, you know, this very, very small population, this country in a vast world of 6.5 billion people. Here we are, this little country. We are trying to bring attention back to things that are directly relevant here. So, yeah, again, I really encourage everyone to take advantage of that.
Absolutely. So from us two here at Truth News Radio Australia.
Yeah, thank you so much, Josh, for your excellent commentary there. It's been a long show. We've gone over 2 hours. So
thanks for your patient listening.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, we look forward to your comments. And good night. And as we say, good night and good luck.